So Parshas Shlach has the first minion in history. What do I mean the first minion in history? The Gemara says that the halacha of a minion is learned from Parshas Shlach. In Maseches Megillah, where it says that you need a minion for Kaddish, for Kedusha, for Baruch Hu, for various other things also, but specifically about those, the Gemara says, Minalan, from where do we know this? And the Gemara says, well, Kaddish, Kedusha, those all have to do with the pasuk of V'nikdashti B'seich B'nei Yisrael. V'nikdashti, that's a reference, not that these are derases, but it's a remez and a smachta, to the Dvarim Shabbat Kedusha, Kaddish, Kedusha, and it says B'seich B'nei Yisrael. It's described as B'seich with the word Teich. And the word Teich appears also in Parshas Koirach. He badlu mitoich ha'eda hara ha'zais. And then, we're connected to Parshas Koirach. That's not so helpful because it doesn't tell us how many people there were. But that word Teich goes together with the word Eda. And the word Eda appeared also in Parshas Shlach. Ad masai lo Eda hara hazais. And there already, we know how many people were in the Eda hara hazais because it's referring to the Meraglim. There were 12 Meraglim altogether. Yehoshua and Caleb were not part of the Eda hara. So that leaves 10. So that tells me that it's 10. So the Eda Hara was 10, and then from there we learn to the Eda by Kairach, the word Eda indicates 10, and that word Eda is written together with the word Teich, and the word Teich connects us back to the pasuk of V'nikdashti B'Teich B'nei Yisrael. So we learn from there that Kedusha, Kaddish, Kedusha, Baruch Hu, have to be with 10, with a minion of 10. So the makar that a minion is 10 people comes from this week's parasha. The original minion was the Eda Hara, which is very ironic that's who made up that minion. That is the prototypical minion, is the minion of 10 Rishayim. It's more than ironic. Rav Moshe Feinstein says that it's a makar for a very important chiddush halacha, a shaila that was very much discussed in the 20th century. He was asked by a Talmud of his who was an American rabbi, what's the halacha of saying Kaddish or Kedusha when you have a minion, but not all of the minion are Shomrei Shabbos. Now, the background over here, you have to understand, is that when we say someone is not Shomrei Shabbos, that's not, it's used as a sort of expression to mean that he's not from. But it has a very specific halachic connotation. A Mechal Shabbos before Hesia is in a category. He's kemumer l'chol tarakula. It's not the same as somebody that doesn't eat kosher. Somebody that goes into a non-kosher restaurant, he doesn't keep a kosher kitchen. He doesn't keep kosher. So that means that he's not from l'gabi kashrus. But it doesn't make him not from l'gabi everything. But Shabbos is different. A mumer l'chol Shabbos is considered a mumer l'chol tarakula. He's considered a kofer be'ikar. He loses all rights and privileges of a Jewish person. You're allowed to lend money beribis to such a person. He's his shechita is psula. His wine is considered yayin esach. That's a mechal Shabbos for Hesia. So what about being mitzdarif to a minion? Could you say Kaddish, Kedusha, Baruch Hu with a minion that includes, imagine that, you walk out, you have 6, 7, 8 people. You go out at center, I'm looking for somebody Jewish. So you find somebody Jewish, you schlep him in, you say, yeah, there's going to be like a chabomfen after davening. Come on in. So this was, I think once upon a time more shchiach than it is today. Could you then say Kaddish, Kedusha, Baruch Hu with that? So Rav Moshe said that, yeah, sure you could. That's a perfect minion. Because after all, what was the original minion? The Meraglim. Now, a Machal Shabbos is as if he's Kaifer B'chal Tarakula. Why? Because Shabbos is Aegis to the Maisa Bereshis, and he doesn't keep Shabbos. So it's as if he's being Kaifer. But the Meraglim, they were Mamish Kaifrim. The Meraglim, they said, as you say, there was no Kfira. Well, all they said was that the land is too strong, we're not going to be able to conquer them. But they use an expression, chazak hu mimenu, that the am that's there is chazak hu, they're too strong, mimenu. Now, the word mimenu is a tricky word. It can mean from us or it can mean from him. So the pshutish shel mikra, probably when you're reading the psukim, is that it means they're stronger than us. But Rashi brings down The Chazal Darshan, the Chazak Hu Mimenu means Kaviyachal Kapi Mala Amru. And they meant that he's stronger than the Rabbeinu Shalom. Now, if to somebody says that the giants in the land are stronger than the Rabbeinu Shalom, that's a Kofer Be'ikar. That's a Kofer Mamish. He's worse than a Mechal Shabbos. And Chazal, good, it's a Medrash, but Chazal interpreted that way. So the Halachas could follow that Medrash. And based on that, Ramosha said that there's nobody that's too big a Rasha to be part of your minion. So if you have a minion and it includes Mechal Shabbos, that's certainly still considered a minion. Legabe Kaddish and Kedushi. He said not necessarily Legabe Tefillah, but Tzibur. That could have other halachas. But the din that you need a minion for Kaddish and Kedusha, because the Gemara Megillah says that that's learned from this Gezeirah Shavah. Again, it's a double Gezeirah Shavah. Toich, toich, eda, eda. It says toich by the pasuk of Kedusha, v'nikdashti b'toich b'nei Yisrael. And then it says toich in a different pasuk where it also has the word eda. And then the word eda gets you to the Meragim where it says l'eda hara hazayis. So that toich, toich, eda, eda connects you to here. And that's the makor for minyan by Kaddish and Kedusha, because of the Nikdashti. So for that, the Kofrim are allowed to be part of the minyan. That was a Moshe's Chiddush, based on
this. Somebody today is Tinnik Shanishber. I mean,
okay, that's the next part. That's the next subject. We'll come to that, Belina, soon.
What do you mean by it's for Kaddish and Kedusha, not for Tfilah B'Sidros? So you daven mincha, so it's like you daven yechidus, but you can make a Kaddish?
Right.
You didn't daven with a minyan.
Right, there's two different halachas. There's a halacha of Tfilah B'Sidros, and there's a halacha that you need 10 people for. In the Mishnah Megillah says that there are certain things that you can't do without a minyan. Kaddish Kedusha, Kriyas HaTorah, Berachas Kehanim, a few other things that I mentioned in that Mishnah. Tefillah is not in that Mishnah. Tefillah, of course, you could daven without a minyan. Of course, you could, right? So that's a list of things that you can't do without a minyan. Tefillah is not on that list because you could daven without a minyan. But then the Gemara in Berachas says that a tefillah b'tzibur has a much greater potency. It's a more powerful tefillah. So therefore, you should daven with a minion. So there are two separate halachas. There's the milah of davening with a minion because of the koyach of tefillah b'tzibur, and then there's the milah of davening with a minion because otherwise you can't say kaddish and kedusha. Two different dinim. Rabbi Yishai is saying this tshuva, this chiddush. I'm saying legabe kaddish and kedusha, which is really more often what people are. I don't want to say concerned about, but when people are desperate for a minion, it's because of the Kaddish, usually.
I don't know how many people realize the distinction.
That's true. And there's a much more relevant distinction. There's a much more relevant distinction. You know, here we're talking about if you have a Kofer or Mechal Shabbos, that's part of the minion. So that, you know, nowadays I think is not as relevant as it once was when Reisha wrote the Tshuva in the 1950s. But there's a very, very relevant nafkamina in this distinction, and that is when you have a minion that doesn't have 10 mispalalim. You have, right, people routinely, they say, okay, do we have 6 people here that didn't daven? 6 people that didn't daven allows you to say Kaddish and Kedusha. Arguably maybe even fewer, but legabe tefillah b'tzibur, the milah of tefillah b'tzibur is a tefillah that's being said by 10 people together. So when you make a minion with, you know, a minimal amount of mispalim, and then you're mashlim with other people, that's not the chashivas of tefillah b'tzibur. But it has the chashivas so that you're able to say Kaddish, Chazaras HaShatz, Kedusha. You're right, a lot of people don't realize that.
I don't think I'm one of them. That was the distinction. Right?
Okay. Okay, it's really two different dinim.
They can be
mitzvah
for a
mizum. No, that's not learned out from an exactly Sechem and Yisrael. It's specifically what's learned from this Gezeirah Shavah. If it's the Gezeirah Shavah that traces back to the Meraglim, then Rav Moshe says it's Chiddush. Now, he points out that one could have very well argued against his whole tshuva and said, maybe you're reading too much into the Gemara. It's true, the Gemara says that the makar for 10 people is because of this Gezer Shava, and the Gezer Shava has multiple steps, but it traces back to the Meraglim. But the Gemara was just using it to tell me how many people you need. Maybe we're learning the number from the Meraglim. But Lagabe, the quality of the people, who they, the identity of the people, that we're not learning from the Meraglim. Lots of times you have the Gezer Shava that learns a halacha from a certain place, but we don't learn all of the halachas from that place. The halacha that the Gemara was focusing on when it made the Gezer Shava, that's what's being learned from there. So that's maybe the weak point in Rav Moshe's argument, that one could very well say that the connection to the Meraglim, the limud from the Meraglim, is just legabe the number 10, but not legabe the quality of who those people are. One could have said that, Misvara. Dr. Moshe, this Gzeir Shava, Teich Teich Eda Eda, that gets you from an Ektashti back to the Pasuk of the Meraglim, appears in two places, in two different contexts. One is legabe the Mishnah Megillah, that you need a minion for Baruch Hu, for Kaddish, etc. The other place that this Gemara, that this Gzeir Shava appears, is in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Excuse me. We need to give a little bit of background. We're going to stay over the Gemara in Sanhedrin, but then what the punchline is going to be, that from that Gemara you're going to see that we're using the Gzeir Shava not just for the number, the quantity of people, but also for the quality of the people, for who they are. What's this Gemara in Sanhedrin? So the truth is, it's the Gemara, it's Sanhedrin Ayin Dalet. Over the last few months, we were in the Gemara Sanhedrin Ayin Dalet quite a few times. That's the Gemara of Yehar Gal Yaver, Pekuach Nefesh, the Shalish Chamurais. But this part of the Gemara, I don't know if we ever mentioned. The Gemara says, of course, that there are Shalish Chamurais, three Averis that you have to give up your life for. The other Averis you don't have to give up your life for, right? So if somebody comes and demands that you give up, that you be Mechal Shabbos, so you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos. You don't have to give up your life for that. And of course, Rachman Olson, if somebody's sick, and it requires a Chil Shabbos to save him, so you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos. But then the Gemara says that which for all the other Averis, other than the big three, Yavr Val Yahar, you're allowed to do the Avera, and you don't have to give up your life, that's all true if it's Betzina, if it's in private. But if it's Befer Hesia, if it's in public, then you do have to give up your life. Now, wait, so does that mean that if somebody has a heart attack in the middle of shul on Shabbos, you're not allowed to call a tzol over here as Befer Hesia? Of course not. The Gemara, a little later on Ayin Amud Beis, makes a very important clarification that this is only true when the Oinis was coming lahavir al-das. If it was meant as an attack on the religion, that somebody came deliberately to force you to violate your religion, and said, I'm going to kill you if you don't do so, then the halacha is that if it's betzina, you don't have to give up your life unless it's one of the big three. But if it's b'far hesia, you have to give up your life for any aveira. So for example, to put that into practical terms, if somebody stops you in a dark alley, you know, grabs you and says, you're Jewish, right? Well, I'm going to make you eat this pork. You say, I don't want to eat the pork. I'm not going to eat it. He says, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to shoot you if you don't eat the pork. So then you're allowed to eat it. Right? Because it's not one of the Shalosh Chamurais, you don't have to give up your life. But if, now that everybody knows, but what people don't realize is that if it happens not in a dark alley, but in the middle of shul, if somebody comes into shul and say, right, with a gang comes in with their guns and they say, well, you guys have to eat pork, and otherwise we're going to kill you, then you have to be Meiser Nefesh. You have to give up your life for that. Again, presumably the reason why they want you to eat the pork is not because they need to know if it needs more pepper, right? Usually they wouldn't get so worked up about it. Right? It's because you're Jewish and they want to show that we could get you to violate your religion. And there the halacha is that b'far hesia, afilu mitzvah kala yehar gal yavar. If it's in public, then even on the lightest mitzvah, you have to give up your life.
That was the Inquisition.
What?
The Inquisition. Right, was before Hesia, and...
What do you mean was before Hesia?
I mean, they came and said you have to accept Christianity.
Yeah, but each individual... Well, if they say you have to accept Christianity, so that's Avodah Zarah. That's not on Mitzvah Kala, that's one of the Shalish Chamurais.
Well, it's Machlek if Christianity, right?
Right, but it's Paschal in Shulchan Aruch. It's true that even if it's not Christianity, even if it's a religion that's not Avodah Zarah, to say that you belong to a different religion is considered Yahar Gval Yavar. And that doesn't matter if it's Betzina or if it's Befer Hesia. But this scenario that we're describing, there were situations where it played itself out.
The Rabbanans also?
What?
Curious, the Rabbanans are included.
Yeah, the Gemara says that Befer Hesia, Filu Mitzvah Kala Yahar Gval Yavar. And then the Gemara says, My Mitzvah Kala. And the Gemara says, the Shnui Arkas Adamasani, to change the shoelaces. If the Yidden had different shoelaces, and Rashi over there says that it's because the Yidden were wearing different shoelaces because they were more tsanua, that it wasn't stama style, it was because of a tsnius, but certainly that's not a dereis, that's a minhag, and even so, if it's a mini Yisrael and it's for some reason, then it goes into the category of mitzvah kala. you know, where this played itself out was during the Holocaust. You often had, even though officially, you know, Nazi policy wasn't really concerned with Shmiras HaMitzvahs. Nazi policy was about Jewish lineage. But anecdotally, there were situations where the Nazis would be very, you know, angry at the Jews that persisted in keeping the mitzvahs, even in a ghetto, even in a camp. You know, there are stories about how in the ghetto, this was in the Kovno ghetto, I think I might have mentioned this recently, that in the Kovno ghetto, if they caught somebody with a beard, they would tear it out with their hands. There was definitely a lot of pressure brought to bear against Shmiras HaMitzvahs. So there are stories of people that were, you know, given pork to eat and told that if you don't eat it, we're going to shoot you. And if that was Befer Hesia, then that was Yehar Gval Yavar. If it was Betzina, then it's not Yehar Gval Yavar. But if it was Befer Hesia, now, of course, not anybody is in a position to judge or to paskin shilas for the people that were in those circumstances. But from the comfort of our swivel chairs, we could say that that at least, you know, that should be the Yehar Gval Yavar.
What you're saying is that if they were told to eat it because of the religion, not because there was no other food.
Right. No. Meaning the Jews in the concentration camps didn't have to keep kosher because they were malnourished, and if they didn't eat the food that they had, they were going to die. But that's not Lahavir al-Das. That was not an attack on their religion. That was just because they didn't want to waste money feeding the Jews, so they gave a very, very meager nutrition. So whatever nutrition they had to eat to keep up, to stay alive. That was mutter, right? Pikuach nefesh was deicha. But if somebody was called in, you know, in one of their assemblies and said, oh, okay, you Jew, we're going to offer you this very geshmaka piece of meat, but you have to eat it, otherwise we're going to shoot you. So that really was the Yehar Gval Yavar. I mean, this is a very well-known story about that remember, I heard it years ago. Now it's written. Joseph Wallace, I think Art Scroll wrote his biography or his memoirs. I remember hearing this story long before that book was in print, with a very poignant connection. We're a little bit off topic, but he writes, Joseph Wallace who was the founder and I guess supporter of the Arachim organization, which has been very instrumental in the Kiruv movement in Eretz Yisrael over many decades. So he was not from, and he was a businessman in Tel Aviv, and one day he got a call from his wife that he should please stop on the way home from the office to pick up supper for the family. And the favorite restaurant that his family liked was, if I remember the name correctly, was called Hapil Halavan, and they sold pork. And he went there to pick up supper. It was a hot day. It was this time of year. There was a chamsin, and the restaurant was crowded, and the line was out the door. So he was standing in the street under a sweltering sun, waiting on line to buy pork for his family. And as he was standing there, he remembered that his mother had told him this exact story that I just described, theoretically, about his grandfather. That his grandfather was in the
camps.
In the camps, and was very frum, and the Nazis singled him out one day, and they said, you have to eat pork, otherwise we're going to kill you. And he said, I'm not going to eat it. And they shot him, and they killed him. And he said, you know, so either he's crazy or I'm crazy. You know, here I'm standing online, I'm being meiser nefesh for that. I have to find out more. Like, that juxtaposition of what he was doing with that story that he heard as a kid, it made him decide that he has to explore more. He got off the line. Actually, I don't know if he did or he didn't buy the supper that night, but that made him start exploring more, and that started his journey to Frumkite, and then that was a catalyst for many, many other people's journey to Frumkite, which is a really, really special story, because if you just think about the fact that if somebody was there, in the first episode, right, of his grandfather in the camps, and they saw him taking a very heroic stand, and then he was shot and he was killed. And it looked like that was the end of the story. And, you know, and the gun got the last word. But if you have, you know, if you're able to see this with a much wider scope of history, see the consequences of that mysterious nefesh, that by 100 years later, by 80 years later, it had brought so many, many more people to, it's really very, very inspiring, the, you know, how you really have to have a very, very long-term perspective to be able to really judge how something worked out. Anyway, we're getting a little bit far afield. But the Gemara says that that's the halacha, that before hesya afilu mitzvah kala, is the har val yavar, as long as it was there was a religious motivation on the part of the ma'anes, so afilu mitzvah kala is the har val yavar. But then the Gemara asks the question which makes it negate to our shir. The Gemara says, what's called for hesya? How many people, how public is public? Yeah. Gemara says, 10 yidin. And then the Gemara says, Shaila, what about if there are 10 people, but 9 of them are yidin and 1 of them is not? Is that good enough? And the Gemara says, good enough, I mean really bad enough. I mean, is that enough to be mechayev? And the Gemara says, no. The 10 people is learned from Gzeirah Shava. Toich, toich, eda, eda. Because this mitzvah they have to be moist nefesh is Kiddush Hashem. That's the Nikdash. That's the same pasuk that's used as an asmachta for saying Kaddish and Kedusha. That's the real makar for Kiddush Hashem. And that's the pasuk of Nikdash, but toich, b'nei Yisrael. That toich gets you to Hibadlu mitoicha eda hara hazois. And that toich gets you to. That toich together with eda gets you to the eda of. Ad Masai La Eda Hara Hazois, and that was the Miraglim, and that was 10 Yidin. And so the Kiddush Hashem also was Dafki with 10 Yidin. So
10 Goyim is not Befer Hesya?
Right. 10 Goyim is not Befer Hesya.
No?
Right. This halacha, they have to be Mice
and
Nefesh.
Even 9 Jews and 1 Goy is not.
1 Goy doesn't
be. Right. It has to be 10 Yidin to have this halacha that you have to be Mice and Nefesh for a mitzvah kala that's only in front of 10 Jews. Dr. Moshe, but so it has to be 10 Jews, and that's learned from the Gezer Shava. Meaning we don't say the Gezer Shava is just telling us the number, and then we could fill in on our own misvara who the people are. The Gemara uses the Gezer Shava to teach me who those 10 people are. So if that's, and the Gemara over there is saying they have to be 10 Jews, but who were the 10 Jews in the Gezer Shava? They were the Meraglim, who were Kaifrim. Mm-hmm. So if that's the Makar for that we use also for the minion that you need for Kaddish and Kedusha, then Kaddish and Kedusha should be able to be said in front, even including Kaifrim in your minion. So he says that based on this, he doubles down on his sock that yes, you're allowed to include Mechalei Shabbos for Hesya in your minion. It's learned from the Meraglim. The Meraglim are worth the Mechalei Shabbos for Hesya. And don't tell me we're only learning the number from the Meraglim. No, you see from this Gemara Sanhedrin that we're learning the identity of who they are from the Meraglim also. And therefore, he says, this is the halacha. Now, he wrote this in Chelek Aleph. Chelek Aleph, which came out in the late 50s. Chelek Aleph of the Igros Moshe, in particular, sparked a lot of mas umatan. You know, it was among the Talmid Chacham. There were Talmid Chacham in America at that time. You know, a lot of Talmid Chacham in far-flung places that you know, communities that didn't really go more than that one generation. But you had a lot of, you know, Europeish Talmid Chacham. And I don't know if there had ever been a sefer of that caliber that had been published in the United States. So really you have, in Chelek Beis of the Igros Moshe, there's a lot of tshuvos that are responses to people that had sent him letters asking kashas or arguing on things that he had written in Chelek Aleph. So in Chelek Beis, there's a tshuva to Rav Mordechai Savitsky. Rav Mordechai Savitsky, who I don't know much about him, he was a chashava, very, very chashava Talmud Chacham, who lived in Boston. His sons, one of his sons lives in Kew Gardens Hills, Fenech Savitsky, who's a world-class Gadol Batayra, and another one of his sons is the Rosh Yeshiva of Tera Vadas, one of the Rosh Yeshiva at least of Tera Vadas. So their father, Mordechai Savitsky, he wrote a letter to Ramayisha, are you a matir to make a minyan to be mitzarif? Mechalei Shabbos? It can't be. And he wrote that Rav Issel Panovitcher, who was one of the Gedeli Litta of the Friya Dikadar, whom Rav Moshe surely was very, you know, machshiv, you know, would have had great respect for, Rav Issel Panovitcher said that it's a davar pashut, that a Mechal Shabbos can't be mitzarif to a min, you can't use it, if you can't say Kaddish, if a Mechal Shabbos, then you mean, Rav Issel Panovitcher said that it's a davar pashut. You're arguing on that? So Moshe wrote back something very interesting. He says, you know, it's very easy to say, oh, it's a davar pashut, Mechal Shabbos is not part of a minyan to say Kaddish. Like, you know, that you could say very easily. But if you're going to be consistent, that means that Rav Issel Panovitcher would have to also maintain, if somebody would ask him, do I have to be Meister Nefesh, is Yehar Val Yavar, for an Aveira in front of a minyan, and the minyan includes a Mechal Shabbos for Hesia? That there also he's going to paskin that no, he's going to paskin lekula, they don't have to be Meister Nefesh, and that's also Pashut? I don't know from where such a thing would be Pashut. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to say Pashut, you know, oh, you can't let him into your shul. But to be paskin lekula gabi the Medina Nefashis, and there also it was Pashut to him, how could such a thing be Pashut? And the two are Talis of Zed, you can't have one without the other. That's what he said back. In other words, he said, yes, I'm arguing with him. He did say he's arguing with him, but his rebuttal was that this is not just an Erech Chaim Shaila about what's called a minyan for davening, for saying Kaddish. This is a Yerideya Shaila. What's called a minyan legabe Yehar Gval Yavar. These are, you know, real Shailas, Dvarim Ha'amdim Rumei Shalailam, and I'm bringing Rayas from Shas. You know, don't tell me that but somebody said it's a Davar Pashat. So that was his response.
What about the
Gzer Shabbat?
He doesn't alter the
Gzer Shabbat? Yeah, that's Ramosha's title. What's he going to say? That this is my Raya, and I don't know how anybody could argue. That's what Ramosha said.
Ramosha was famous for arguing when he had. He would argue even on Rishonim, I think, if he had Gemara to show that.
Rishonim would be an extreme case, but definitely he. Rav Moshe very much was a believer in the independence of the Pesach, right? That a Pesach's achrayas, you know, there's different philosophies in Pesach. There are some Pesachim that their whole approach is based on precedent. You know, see what the other Pesachim said. And their Derech HaLimud is very much to learn a lot of Sifrei Shailas and Shuvas. And then when a Shaila comes up, be Madama Milsa Lamilsa, you know, I saw in this Shuvah and that Shuvah and that Shuvah. The Litvish Pesachim, for the most part, did not hold of that Pesach. I don't know if I said over here that there was an expression they used in Litta, like a disparaging, you know, if somebody would write a tshuva or somebody, even in the course of a discussion, would bring a lot of Mara Mekoymis. This one says, you know, I saw in this Sefer and such and such a simon, and this Sefer and such a simon, they would say, what? Right, like Avad Yosef, certainly he's one of the, you know, the best examples of that genre. So in Litta, they used to say, Medav Gevin Geltzu de Trugger. And we need a tip for the porter, you know, because oh, he's carrying the svarim for us. Like they weren't machsh of that. They, you know, you have to learn the Gemara, and to go back to the Gemara, learn the Gemara, Rashi, Taisus, Rishonim, the Rambam, and that's how you paskin. And if you're, obviously, if you're not qualified, then you shouldn't be paskin. But if you are qualified, then you don't need to be saying the same thing that everybody else said 300 years ago, 400 years ago. That was very much Rav Moshe's day, and, you know, and not only Rav Moshe, that was the Litvish Erech. The Chazon Ish also very much follows, someone like Avad Yosef, he indicates in a few places in his Shuvas, he can't understand how these people said these things, and they just disregarded what, he has dozens of Pesachim that said not like that. But Rav Moshe, that was definitely his derech, right, to tell him, you know, it's even funny, you know, to tell him Rav Issel Panovitcher said, I mean, I've read enough from the Great Moshe, even though I'm sure he had tremendous derech eretz for Rav Issel Panovitcher, but that wasn't even Oyla B'cheshvin, but how he was going to paskin. but that being said, he did say that there is sort of a weak point in his psak. I mean, if you're going to attack the psak and argue, the way to argue would be as follows. There's a Gemara in Gittin Daf Memhei, which says that a min, an apikiris, can't write tefillin. Why? Because it says ukshartam lois al yedacha uchsavtam al mezuzas pesacha. So there's a hekesh between the kshira and the ksiva. Misha yeshnei b'kshira yeshnei b'ksiva. Misha ina b'kshira ina b'ksiva. So that means that the person that writes the tefillin has to be somebody who's included in the mitzvah of putting on the tefillin. Okay, so the Gemara says, so therefore, let's say, if a goy writes tefillin, that's not going to be kosher because he doesn't have the mitzvah. If a woman writes tefillin, that's not going to be kosher because she doesn't have the mitzvah. So all that, right? Okay, Shatav Katan, certainly. All that is easy. But the Gemara also includes, it's a brisa, that a min who writes tefillin, the tefillin aren't going to be kosher because he's not included in the mitzvah. And what does that mean, he's not included in the mitzvah? A min is, he has a different shulchan aruch. A min means he doesn't keep the mitzvahs, but he's mechuyev to keep the mitzvahs. He, of course, he has to put on tefillin, right? If a Lubavitcher chassid comes over to him, he'll put tefillin on him. They just say, are you Jewish? They don't say, are you a maimon? Of course he's chayev to put on tefillin. But Aval Pikein, the Gemara is Megala here, that if somebody doesn't keep the mitzvahs, so in a certain sense, he's considered an eni mechuyev b'davar. Even though he's mechuyev to do it, he's mechuyev to do tshuva and then keep the mitzvahs, but because man that he hasn't done tshuva, he's considered an eni mechuyev b'davar, le'inyan that if he writes a pair of tefillin, that's a violation of kol sheyesh nebikshira, yesh nebiksivi. He's considered enoi bikshira. So Ramosha said that maybe by the same token, when it comes to, let's say, davening, saying Kedusha, this Michal Shabbos, he's not from, he's Mumar L'chal Tarakula, so he's considered an Enim Mechuyev B'davar in the Kedusha, in saying Kedusha. Of course, he's supposed to do tshuva and start coming to shul and saying Kedusha, but Kol Zman that he's a Michal Shabbos for Hesed, he's considered an Enim Mechuyev B'davar L'gabi the Kedusha. So now you could say that my minion here, I don't have a minion of 10 mechuyavim. Could I say Kedusha without 10 mechuyavim? So that's actually machalikas rishonim. And there are rishonim that say that in order to say Baruch Hu, you need 10 people that didn't daven ma'ariv yet. In order to say Kedusha, you need 10 people that didn't, let's say by minchi, you need that 10 people that didn't daven minchi yet. If you hold that way, then Zot Yomayisha, I could hear, arguably, but I could hear that maybe this Michal Shabbos can't be part of your minyan for Kaddish and Kedusha. But Lamaisa, the minhag is not like that. Even though in the Rishonim is a very big machlekes, and it's not really resolved. It's not as if we have a bottom line that we paskin that you don't need mechuyavim. But the minhag ha'olam is to be mekel. He said definitely the minhag ha'olam. I mean, if you've ever seen somebody get up after Maariv and say, Shem Hashi, I'm not getting anything Kareinu. Baruch Hu Hashem, after everybody finished Maariv, this guy didn't daven Maariv yet, so he didn't hear Baruch Hu. Or he did daven, but he didn't hear Baruch Hu, right? He didn't say Baruch Hu. So he feels that he still needs a Baruch Hu. So, but where's his minion? There's 9 other people in the shul, but they all heard Baruch Hu. So what you have here is a minion where one guy is a Mechuyev B'davar, and 9 people are in a Mechuyavim. So the truth is that there's a lot of Rishonim that say you can't say Baruch Hu under those circumstances. Taisus and Megillah brings down the Talmidim of Rashi quoted B'Shem Rashi that he said you could. Taisus doesn't really accept it as that we should necessarily pass it like that, but that's the Shita of the Talmidim of Rashi, B'Shem Rashi. And that's the Minhag Ha'olam. So Zokter Moshe, if that's the Minhag Ha'olam, that you could say Baruch Hu after Maariv, then you could rely on these Michal and Shabbos also. It's the same, even though it looks like what Shaykh is one to the other. But he says that's the same concept, because the only basis to disqualify them is to call them Einu Mechuyavim B'davar. But if we say Baruch Hu after Maariv, right, because somebody came in late, that means you don't need a minyan of Mechuyavim. As long as the person saying Baruch Hu is Mechuyav, so the people making up his minyan don't have to be Mechuyavim. So now if I have a minyan that includes a Michal Shabbos, maybe he's not considered a Mechuyev B'davar, like the Gemara in Davim, hey, he can't write my tefillin for me. He's not a Mechuyev B'davar. But if I don't need a minyan of Mechuyavim, then it's going to be okay. And therefore he says, halach al-mais, the bottom line, since we're semech, the minhag ha'olam is to be semech, and that sheet is fashion, you don't need a Mechuyavim B'davar, you're allowed to be mitzar for Michal Shabbos to be part of your minyan.
Even if somebody is a Mechuyev, stands next to the person that's writing it, he can't do it.
Right, God will only Gabov. I don't think helps for that. Right.
For reason, it helps by Chereshet of God.
For writing tefillin. For writing tefillin.
For
writing tefillin.
Yeah.
They could do it.
Are you sure? Not only for writing a get, where it's not to be yotzei mitzvah, but it's just mishum l'shma. So over there, the Gemara discusses for a katan, where it says that a good I'm an al-gabav helps.
I'm al-gabav is when you don't need l'shma.
Right.
Can't you when you need l'shma?
No, not entirely true. Right? Taisis and Gittin. And Gittin, Chav Beis, Chav Kimmel. Ksivas get needs l'shma. And Taisis says, the Gemara says that God Olam and Gabbav helps. And Taisis says, Tefillin does need l'shma, but Tefillin we think there's an additional requirement. There's an additional requirement that you need Misha Yeshna and Bechal Ksiva.
L'shma by get means that it's written for that person.
Right.
It's not the same as when you're writing something that has to be written l'shma.
Mitzvah.
I think there's a difference in what the Lishma means.
Yeah.
A get has to be written by, for example, get has to be written by a Shabbos person.
No,
it has to
I
be
think
Lishma.
No,
I think the din Lishma, I don't know if you have to say that the din Lishma is two different dinim. There's din Lishma, but then by tefillin there's an additional din in Mishi Yeshnei B'Ksiva. I should say Yeshnei B'Ksiva. That's the psul of here.
Isn't the Shema by get more or less, divided maybe? To a specific person?
Right.
You can't write to A and give it to B.
Right. That's true.
That's the Lishma part of it. It doesn't. It's not Lishma like tefillin or.
Yeah, that's what you said.
That's what I'm saying.
Sure, tefillin also Lishma means for this purpose. If you write a parasha.
For that person.
Right, it doesn't have to. Right, it's not to the same degree. It doesn't have to be for the person that's going to use it. You could write tefillin for everybody.
Right.
Right. So the requirement of the Shema has different specifics, but I don't know if that means that it wouldn't that should make a difference. The Gabi 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 Dalim and Al Kabav.
It could be a safer write 100 pairs of tefillin and have them sit in the shelf, right?
That has to be.
Right.
I remember.
Right, it has to be for the specific person. You're right. That you don't have. That's not true. Write tefillin.
Right.
Correct. Okay, so that's Rav Moshe's bottom line. It's the end of his tshuva. The two tshuvas again, he wrote in Chelek Kaf. He repeated it in Chelek Beis, and he says yes, Machal Shabbos is allowed to be part of the minyan. Now, as somebody mentioned earlier, there's another consideration that could have been used to possibly allow the Machal Shabbos to be part of the minyan, and that's the very famous expression Tinek Shenishba. So let's give a little bit of background on that. What does it mean? What doesn't it mean? And then we'll come back and compare it to the Igros Moshe. The Gemara at the beginning of the parak called Gadol Masechah Shabbos. This is stuff Samach Zayin Ches, somewhere around there. I'm not sure exactly. I think either Samach Zayin or Samach Ches. The Gemara discusses how many chatois a person brings if he's Mechal Shabbos on multiple Shabbosites. And in that context, the Gemara discusses a case of a tinoik, a baby, shenishpa, who was taken captive. Mm-hmm. Meaning, somebody who was born into a Jewish community, Jewish family and Jewish community, but while he was still a baby, before he learned anything, there was an attack by Goyim, an army, and they captured this baby and they took him away. And then he spent the next 30, 40, 50 years growing up in a totally foreign culture, and he has no idea anything about being Jewish. And then, after all those decades, he comes back to the Jewish community, and he discovers that he's Jewish, and he learns about being Jewish, and he says, okay, I think I did malach on Shabbos. He did. So now the shaila is, so how many chatois does he bring? So there's a few possibilities that the Gemara discusses. What, right? Does he bring a chatas for every malacha that he did, every Shabbos? Does he just bring one carbon for every Shabbos? So the Gemara says both of those the Gemara rejects. In this case, it will be enough to bring one carbon chatas. But then there's a machlekes in the Gemara whether he has to bring a carbon chatas at all. Does he bring a carbon chatas? Or do we say that he's actually less than a shagig? Yeah, right, the classic definition of shagig is somebody did malach because he didn't know it was Shabbos or he didn't know that this is us or on Shabbos. So he definitely didn't know that this was Asar on Shabbos. When he built and he planted and he lit fires, he didn't know that it was Asar on Shabbos. So he fits the definition of a shegeg. But it's a machlokes, it's Rav and Shmuel against Rav Yechon and Rish Lakish, that maybe this is less than a shegeg. He didn't know, and there's no way he could have known. Maybe he's even called an oines. So that's a machlokes in the Gemara. Is he an oines or is he a shegeg? Now, I think it comes as a surprise to people that we paskin that he's not considered an oines. People are familiar with the expression tinek shenishba as like the ultimate example of that it's not his fault. The Gemara discusses whether it's an oines or it's not an oines. We paskin that it's not an oines. We paskin that he brings the carbon chatas. But for our purposes, that machalikas doesn't really matter because whether he's an oines or he's not an oines, but the whole discussion is about whether he's part from machatas. Or does he bring the chatas? But he's definitely not more than that. He's definitely not a mezid. And to become a mumar, you need to be a machal Shabbos b'mezid. And this tinek shenishba, the Gemara says, at worst, he brings the karmel chatas, which means he's considered a shaygeg. So that wouldn't make him like a mumar l'chal tar kula. Okay. Well, that the Gemara was talking about this, you know, kid that was taken captive by an army. What does that have to do with the Machal Shabbos nowadays? There was no army, nobody was taken captive. So the argument started to be made really in the mid-1800s that times have changed. It used to be that the Jewish community was pretty uniformly religious. And if somebody was not keeping the mitzvahs, that was a yachid. Mm-hmm. An individual rebelled against the community. He grew up knowing about Shabbos. His parents kept Shabbos. All the people around him kept Shabbos, and he decided, I'm not going to keep Shabbos. And on that, Chazal said, he's a mumar l'chal tar kula. But nowadays, there's such a thing as Jews that they're a whole community, and their community's doctrine is that you don't have to keep Shabbos. So if somebody grows up in that community, that's the quote-unquote chinuch that he got, so it's not his fault that he thinks, he may know about Shabbos, but he thinks that it's voluntary, or he thinks that it's only for the crazies. So that's as good as never having heard of Shabbos. He didn't have the benefit of an education that taught him about the chashivas of Shabbos. So maybe we can't consider him a mezid. Even if they do all the malachis, maybe they're considered a shoygeg. As far as I know, the first shuva where this appears is in the Shalas Shuvas Binyan Tzion, which is from the Aruch Haner. He wrote this in a shuva in 1861. There's a quote from Rav Yosef Shaul Natanson, who was at the same time as the Aruch Haner. He's quoted in the following dar of Rav David Zvi Hoffman. He was a German Rav. Shalas Teshuvas Mlamed L'Hayil. And he has a quote. There's two Geshmaka quotes in his Teshuvah. One, he writes that he heard somebody, he says the name of a friend of his that told him in the name of Rav Yosef Shaul Natanson, that the Jews in America, it's a funny line that he had, the Jews in America can't make Yayin Nesach. Meaning, right, we know that a non-from Jew, if he touches the wine, it's a Yayin Nesach. The Jews in America can't make Yayin Nesach if they tried, because they're all Tinek Shenishbas. That's what Rabbi Yisrael Natanzin is quoted as having said, that all the Jews in America are considered Tinek Shenishba. And the Mlamed L'Hayil of David Zvi Hoffman, he quotes some other poskim also that said a similar idea to Tinek Shenishba, and then the other line that I thought was very memorable, he writes, and they said this be'eretz Ungarin, mikol shekein be'eretz Ashkenaz. He said, if they said this about the Hungarian Jews, so for us German Jews, he was in Germany, for us German Jews, even more so, because that was really the headquarters of the Reform, as where they were most entrenched. So the poskim in the 1800s, Gedolei HaPoskim started to use this rationale to justify not taking such a hard line against the Reformed Jews, really meaning of the second generation and on, meaning the people that made the breaks, they would be considered kaifrim. But their children, and of course, after that, you know, goes very many generations, people that grew up in that system, you can't consider them Rishayim. You consider them Tinek Shenishba. The Shaila took a little bit of a, you know, takes a new twist in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, there are a lot of Paiskim that argue that, you know, you have a guy that's not from, he's a Chiloni, but there's no such thing as not being exposed to from. Every Chiloni in Eretz Yisrael knows that there's Torah and there's mitzvahs and there are people that keep it and that they consider it mandatory. So what doesn't he know? He's just deciding not to accept it. So maybe we can't, you know, in Germany they said Tinek Shenishba, but maybe in Eretz Yisrael we can't say Tinek Shenishba. So in the times of the Chazon Ish already, this was being debated. The Chazon Ish argued, he disagreed very strongly with that. And he said, he quotes a couple of Mokaris and Rishonim, that if somebody is a Rasha, that a person can't be considered a Rasha until he's given Teichacha. Now, what does that mean to give somebody Teichacha? So, again, in the olden days, where everybody, you know, basically was supposed to know what to do and knows better and was supposed to be keeping the mitzvahs, and then he you know, lights a fire on Shabbos. So then Teichacha was very easy. He's supposed to go over and tell him, you're not allowed to light a fire on Shabbos. And then if he persists, he continues to do it, he's a Rasha. That's, he quotes from the Hagois Maimini, that's a Rishon from the 1200s, that in order to become a Rasha, you have to first get Teichacha. You're not considered a Rasha until you have Teichacha. The Chazon Ish said, okay, so I'm going to take that as a starting point. But now what I'll add to that is, but Teichacha is not such a simple thing. Teichacha has to be credible. Meaning, it means that you were told something by someone that you really should have accepted, and it's a rishus that you didn't accept it. But when you're dealing with people that their starting point is not that we all keep the Torah, if they have a different starting point, so then it's a real skill to give a teichacha that should be compelling. And who says that that we have that skill? So you know, we don't know with his lashon is something like you know, Einan Yoidim, how to give Teichacha. I'm not remembering the quote precisely, but he says we don't know how to give Teichacha properly, and so all of the Rishayim are still considered to be like before the Teichacha, and therefore, even if they're exposed to Jews, to from Jews, but they're still considered Tinek Shenishba. If they were considered Tinek Shenishba in Germany, they could be considered Tinek Shenishba in Yerushalayim, because even though they were exposed to Jews, but it's still considered without Teichacha. Yeah, it's a very interesting Maramakim. Just to digress for a minute, he writes over there, he says that this idea that it's a art to give Teichacha, and you can't really assume that you know, you see a rush, you can't assume that he got a proper Teichacha. He says that he's getting this from the back of the Sefer Avas Chesed, who quotes it B'Shem Rishonim. Now, the Sefer Avas Chesed is the Chofetz Chaim. So I was tracking this down. The Chofetz Chaim wrote a Sefer Avas Chesed. This psak, which is widely said over B'Shem the Chazon Ish, does it actually come from the Chofetz Chaim? So I wanted to look it up. The Chofetz Chaim wrote a Sefer Avas Chesed, which is a halacha sefer about the importance of the mitzvahs of Chesed and Tzedakah, Gemilas Chasadim. And then on the last page, he added something he called Marganisa Tava, which means a pearl. Like he said, I have something very precious here, I want to add it. And it's what he adds over there is a couple of pages of Hanhagais, I think 44 paragraphs, numbered paragraphs, of Hanhagais, of a Yid named Rabbi Yonason Voliner from the city of Lopcha. And I don't know who he is. I never saw his name. And I even, you know, using Google, I tried to find, is there any reference to him elsewhere? He appears to be, as far as I can tell, unknown. The Chofetz Chaim wrote at the back of his Sefer that I got my hands on the Hanhagos of Rabbi Yonason Voliner, who he says was known to be, I think, Moifis Hadar Bahasmadas Limudai Uva Maisav Hagedoylim. This is somebody that the Chofetz Chaim was extraordinarily misspoiled from. And he read through the Hanhagos. I mean, the Hanhagos was just totally out of this world. I mean, he was completely, you know, living a malachdika experience. I mean, he has some other limud. He talks about how, you know, not to ever be mevatel Torah chas v'shalom for a rega or a mixas rega, but you know, and there's a lot in, you know, his approach to mitzvahs and to tefillah ben adam l'makom. But there's just as much about the ben adam l'chaveray, about how to talk to another person and the feelings for another person, but on a very, very high madrega. I mean, every paragraph there is, it's really extraordinary that somebody lived like that. I mean, and the Chofetz Chaim found it extraordinary that somebody lived like that. You know, we have a little bit of a picture of what the Chofetz Chaim was, but this is something that the Chofetz Chaim thought was out of this world.
They say about the Chofetz Chaim that I think one year he said that he figured out that he was mevat, I mean,
his Bittul Torah,
like 3.5 hours of the entire year he should have learned, and maybe he spoke to someone or whatever. I think I once heard that story about.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. So he quotes, he brings down this Marganita Tava of Hanhagos from Rabbi Yonis and Volino. Yeah. And in there, it's Ois Yud Zayin, he writes that a person, there's a lav in the Torah, but it says, a person has to never, chas v'shalom, have sinah for a fellow Yid. And even though, it says in the Gemara that for a Rashi, you're allowed to have sinah, but no, but he brings down from the Maram Lublin that who's not a Rishon, he's a early Achrein. He says that he brings down from the Maram Lublin that a person can't be considered a Rasha until he was given proper techacha, and then he writes, and who knows how to give proper techacha to the Rishayim. That's where this quote comes from. Who knows how to give proper techacha from the Rishayim? Was written in the Hanhagos Tovos of this tzaddik, you know, Rabbi Yonis and Veliner. But the Chazon Ish, he took that, he held that way halacha l'maisa. He was applying that. He was applying that in a much more broadly than it was said originally in this list of Hanhagos Tovos that Rabbi Yonis and Veliner was just talking about not having sinah. But he was writing it about practical halacha, he's about minyan, about shechita, about yayin, that the mechalei shabbos bizmanenu can't be considered rishayim because they're not given proper techacha. So that's the idea of tinek shenishba. Again, it started with the poskim in the 1800s. The Chazon Ish made this very important haysafa that it applies even if they're exposed to tayridika living. One other nekuda about the Tinek Shenishba is that it really does have a much earlier source. It comes from a Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos Mamrim said it, even though I said that it's really a new phenomenon. But you know where they had it in the times of the Rishonim? They had it with the Karayim. The Karayim were a community apart. They had their own, it's not that they weren't religious. They were very religious, but they were just following their own religion. So their Shabbos had no shaykhs to our Shabbos. They definitely did malacha. They didn't light fires. That malacha they didn't do. But they did all the other malachas. They didn't accept Hilcha Shabbos the way that we have it. So certainly, maybe they didn't do all of them, but malachas that maybe aren't so obvious, let's say tying knots, chances are they did that. So they were Mechalei Shabbos. The Rambam writes in Perek Beis Hilchos Mamrim, and the Rambam was, by the way, a strong loichim against the Karayim. It was really one of the projects of his life, was to wage war against the Karayim. And yet, the Rambam writes that all of the strict things the Chazal say about the Rishayim, when it comes to the Karayim, you could only apply it to the first generation. Aval b'neim u'v'nei b'neihem that grew up like that, they're not considered Rishayim. So that's really the original makar to this idea of Tinek Shenishba, and then people like the Aruch Lener, Shaul Nathanson were using that and applying it to the modern times. So based on all of that, that's another reason to say that they could count as part of the minyan. Now the question is, so in Rav Moshe Feinstein, who was asked in two tshuvas about counting the Mechalei Shabbos in America as part of a minyan, and he said that he was matirat, but not because of the reason of Tinek Shenishba. And it's interesting, I've said many times that I love the Dirshu Mishnah Brura. I think that they did a phenomenal job. I have a shtickle of a critique over here. They put the two together. They have, because in the Mishnah Brura it says that the minyan is in Simen Nun Dalet, I think, that a Mechal Shabbos for Hesed can't be part of your minyan. And then there's a note in the Dirshu where they bring a whole bunch of paiskim that the Tinek Shenishba, that nowadays the Mechal Shabbos is considered Tinek Shenishba, and they could be part of the minyan, and they bring down some that argue, based on what I was saying before, that nowadays they're exposed to Teredika living. But in the course of that, in that note, they bring down this truth from the Gris Maisha also, as if he's part of that team. that was matter because of Tinik Shenishba. But it's not. It's really, it's a whole different lumdus. What Moshe Feinstein said, yes, he would have said in the 1500s too. This had nothing to do with the fact that nowadays Jewish society has changed and that there are people that, you know, there's a whole group of people that are not from. Moshe was saying, Me'ikr Hadin, a Machal Shabbos for Hesia is Mesarif to a Minyan. Even if you consider him a Rasha, mm-hmm, not with the lumdus that he's not considered a Rasha because he's a Tinuk Shanishba. Zol Zayin a Rasha, but he's still Mesarif to the Minyan because the Meragim were also Rishayim. So it's a whole different lumdus than the Tinuk Shanishba lumdus. And then the shaila is, so does that mean that Rav Moshe didn't accept this lumdus of Tinuk Shanishba? That would be a very significant diuk. But the truth is, it's a ha'ara, it's surprising that he didn't mention this lumdus, but it's not really a diuk or a raya.
He didn't need to.
Right, he didn't need to, and the nafkamina is that his was being Raviach first generation Mechal Shabbos also, which certainly, again, 1950s America, you had a lot of that also. People that did go to yeshiva, you know, and they went 8 years or 12 years of day school and yeshiva education, and then they stopped keeping Shabbos.
You have a lot of it today, it's just wrong.
You have a lot of it today also? Okay.
You speak to a lot of people that remember their grandparents keeping Shabbos.
Okay.
And they remember the first things that.
And they mamash are so far removed. Wow. But they remember a grandmother that kept shop.
Okay. That's a big issue. Right. What about okay. The but all right. I think it was more. Certainly more widespread, I think. In that time, in the 1950s, the yeshiva graduates, a very very large percentage of them were not maintaining a shmir Shabbos.
You have to work.
Okay. So Rav Moshe was saying that they could also be Mesarif. The Heter of Tinik Shanishba would not apply to those. Those that are Matirit al Tinik Shanishba, you can't say that to somebody that went through 12 years of yeshiva and then stopped keeping Shabbos. Yeah. But Rav Moshe was saying that
it's filled into the Hudson.
Right. You had that, right? So Rav Moshe's tshuva is significant that he's saying that even without coming, could be there is a Heter of Tinik Shanishba, but even without coming onto the Heter of Tinik Shanishba, Legabi bin Mistarif to a minion, you have Heter anyway, which he learns from the Meraglim.
What about the Sora?
In Colonel Place? No, let me just go back. Pass card, let's go back. Let's go straight home. Go back as well.